This created a bubbling cauldron of ideas. It created an explosive atmosphere where people gave freely of their ideas, didn't hide anything, discussed things with one another, criticized one another, spurred each other on, patted each other on one another on the back when good things happened.
Sir Gustav Nossal, discussing his days as director of the Walter and Eliza Hall Institute of Medical Research from 1965 until 1996. The organisation is otherwise known as WEHI or the Hall Institute. To commemorate the 90th anniversary of WEHI, five living legends from the Institute were invited to share their recollections about life and science. One of our most highly respected Australians, Sir Gustav Nossal, was born in Bad Ischl, Austria, in 1931. He was a child at the time of the German occupation, and he now reflects on the year before the outbreak of the Second World War.
The first distinct memory was Christmas 38, when there were practically no Christmas presents. Now, that was so unusual for my parents. And that is, of course, because my dad, being of Jewish extraction, had fallen on hard times, lost his job. There was absolutely no money around. Now, I should backtrack a tiny bit from that and say I do remember very well standing near the Hofburg in the middle of Vienna, a great big park, when Hitler made his famous speech of the Anschluss, when he in fact grabbed Austria and made it part of Germany. And I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of people were there in the square, but my two brothers and I were there trying very hard to, as it were, oppose what was going on, because we weren't for the Anschluss. My parents weren't for the Anschluss.
What were you doing to exhibit your lack of support for the whole program?
Well, there was a real ambivalence here. You see, at school, and I had 1.5 years of schooling in Austria, at school there was a lot of brainwashing. The Hitlerjugend, the Hitler youth, were made to be really heroic figures. The Jews were made to seem like really dastardly figures. And we were all given two mementos of Hitler. One was a little photograph, which I framed, which I promptly hid in the drawer of my dressing table near my bed because I didn't want my parents to see it. And the other was a small swastika on a pin, which I carefully put on the back of my lapel when I got home, but I was very proud to wear it in the streets. Ambivalent, you know, part of me knew that this was hateful because otherwise why would my parents hate it? Part of me was caught up in the enthusiasm.
Did your parents openly discuss their hatred for what was going on?
I think my parents had to be reasonably careful because after all, at 7 years old, you could blab out anything. And there was an atmosphere of great fear amongst anyone who was, as in my case, half Jewish by blood, though not by religion. And so I think the short answer to your question is no, there wasn't a great deal of open discussion. Now, my two brothers were older. My eldest brother was 14 at the time we immigrated. They may have talked more about it with him.
And so when you came out to Australia in 1939, you came out because your parents wanted to flee conditions in Austria?
Yes, that's precisely right. My mother was Catholic and fairly blue-blooded. She was actually a baroness, whatever that means. My father was not Jewish, interestingly enough, but he had two Jewish parents who had him and his brother baptized as little boys. He went to a snobbish Catholic school. He married a Catholic girl. That actually was part of his problem when he got here, because all of the other bloody refers, as we were called, were of course Jewish. And he, to that extent, not identifying with that peer group, he really had no peer group. It was a difficult time for him. But yes, we escaped from Hitler because, of course, we didn't know how far the things he threatened in Mein Kampf would actually go. But in fact, they went practically all the way to what he'd written in his book.
So when you came out to Australia, it must have been fairly shocking in many ways, in the different language, totally different country, and you were totally away from all your family and friends.
Well, absolutely right. In all my young life, say up until the age of 12 or 14, I could always break my life up into the before and after. Before the emigration itself, including some hairy experiences in storms on the boat, and afterwards. But when we first came to Australia, I was sent on the first day to a state school in Rose Bay. I found myself surrounded by a noisy wall of silence because, you know, eight-year-old kids do a lot of running around and they scream and they talk, and so did these kids. But, of course, I couldn't understand the words that they were saying because I couldn't speak any English.
Which must have been incredibly traumatic.
Indeed. And the first 3 months, I can frankly reveal, were quite difficult for my brothers and myself.
Well, you went to St. Aloysius in North Sydney. You didn't go so well at first, getting last out of 26, but it wasn't long before you were getting first out of 26.
Well, you're sweet too. Remind me of that. Because I didn't speak a word of English, I did in fact get marked. I was in fact 26th at the end of first term. In my what was then grade 3. Fortunately, by the end of the year, I was first out of the 26.
And that kept
for on. Whatever that might have meant.
And was that a pressure from your parents to do really well, or what was the motivation?
Well, I think my parents were very keen for us to do well, were very keen for us to integrate into Australian society. And I don't mind saying that my father in particular took rather more notice of these silly school exam results than they merited. But if you ask me what my motivation was, it really came mainly from the inside. I've described myself as insanely ambitious. I don't think I ever completely lost sanity, but I was a very ambitious kid and I was very keen to do well. And that was the only way in which I could do well, being good at the study, because I certainly wasn't any good at sport, which is what all my school friends wanted to be good at.
But you still had time to play tennis and fun in your life as a child?
Yes, I had two sports, one of which I was not very good at all, and one of which I was reasonably good at, which filled some leisure hours. Tennis, where we played every fortnight at the home of a dear school friend who remains a friend to this day. And that was okay. I'd never had any lessons, so it was only fair. And then table tennis, which I kind of took to and became reasonably good at.